Welcome to Nothing Ventured, a podcast exploring the stories that make the incredible world of tech and venture tick. Join me, Arish Shah, as I speak to the founders, investors, and ecosystem operators trying to make a dent in the future.
Hi there, this is Arish Shah, host of Nothing Ventured. We hope you've been enjoying our podcast so far. Just a quick note on our upcoming interview with Remy Assier, founder of Vauban. We recorded this podcast back at the end of May 2022, just 1 month before the announcement of Vauban's acquisition by Carta, the equity management platform. Obviously, as you would understand, Remy wasn't able to discuss the details of that transaction because it had not been finalized at that stage. And so it is a notable absence from our conversation. However, I do hope you will enjoy the conversation with Remy as we talk about Vauban's platform, the future of angel investing and VC, and the democratization of access to the asset class. Enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah. Today, I am really excited to have with me Remy Assier. Remy is co-founder and co-CEO of Vauban, a company creating the infrastructure needed to deploy capital and make startup investing faster, easier, and more accessible. With over $1 billion invested via Vauban's platform in companies from Airbnb to SpaceX, the company provides solutions for angels, emerging venture funds, founders, and more. Prior to co-founding Vauban with Ulrich Musset, Remy worked in professional services and has been all in on Vauban since 2018. Remy, it's wonderful to have you with me on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Arish.
Let's jump straight in. So we've talked to other special purpose vehicle SPV solution providers on the podcast before. Can you give our listeners an idea of how the platform works and who it's intended for?
It's a good question. So basically, our platform is really meant for kind of global venture, which means that we really cater to an international investor base rather than focus on one jurisdiction. So the way we think about private market is that you should be able to deploy capital from anywhere in the world to deploy it anywhere in the world. And I would say that's our main differentiator, is that it's really, you know, capitalism without border. So the way the platform works is it's actually quite simple. You log in onto the platform. If you want to create an SPV, for example, you choose the company you would like to invest in. You choose a round you would like to invest in. And then you just invite your investors to subscribe to that. You may as well be able to play with parameters to add yourself a carried interest, for example, or management fee. But it's entirely up to you. It's a very self-serve experience, even though we still give to each of our customer a dedicated kind of account manager. That's pretty much it. We have also engineered the platform for scale, which means that so we say no to clients actually fairly often, because we really want to focus on people. You know, that kind of want to become professional investors and deal makers rather than amateurs. And I don't say, you know, amateurs with any bad connotation. Like, I mean, I'm an amateur investor myself. I'm an amateur musician. There's nothing wrong about it. But the way we build Vauban is really for people that want to scale an investment business. So that's what we do essentially. We're the easiest way to launch and run an investment business, starting with a venture capital firm.
Yeah, okay, I get that. I think that makes sense. So what you're trying to do is ensure that the quality of the deal flow that comes onto the platform is driven by sophisticated, maybe repeat investors with track record, performance, et cetera. That doesn't preclude them from bringing in investors such as you say, you or me, very much an amateur investor myself, and definitely a small check investor into those syndicates, right? And you mentioned there, you know, people who want to create an investment business. Like, one of the things that we've discussed a fair amount actually on this podcast with a number of emerging fund managers, both here in the UK and the US, is certainly here in the UK and in Europe in general, how difficult or how kind of occluded the whole structuring and infrastructure around fund creation is. Does Vauban make that easier in that case? Is that something that you guys deliver? If I wanted to create a fund, is Vauban the place for me to come and do that as AngelList is in the US, or is that not quite where you are yet?
Yeah, that's exactly what we do. So our customers, down to the core, they, you know, investors or like deal makers who are experienced in some shape or form in the tech ecosystem, and that don't necessarily want to go through the nuances of structuring, administration, accounting, reporting, etc. So, you know, they rather just find hot deals and find investors to fuel them. And we build Vauban with that in mind. So it's pretty much a, you know, all included infrastructure platform. When I told you how it worked earlier, I made it quite simple, but there's actually a lot that happens in the background. So, you know, we will set up your legal documents. We would incorporate your vehicle. We would provide you with the banking infrastructure as well. So we have kind of our own neobank, you know, to process payments. And then we would do the reporting to your investors. So the idea is, you know, come as you are and, you know, we'll make it very easy for you to get started into the venture capital world.
Amazing. I think there's definitely need for that. So you and Vauban are based in the UK, right? And you talked a lot just now about making sure that the platform is international for international investors. So what jurisdictions can you cater for? Is it global or are there specific jurisdictions that you can't look at? And I presume US, UK, and certain kind of European countries might be the more more often required ones. But like here on Nothing Venture, we've talked to a lot of investors in the UK and the US, but I'd love to also get a perspective on the state of the ecosystem in Europe and how Vauban is also kind of changing the status quo out there.
So I think I think you shouldn't look at jurisdictions, but you should look at what you want to do. Right? Like, where do you want to raise money from? Where do you want to deploy it? And where are you based physically, you know, as a manager, as a fund manager? And these are pretty much the three variables that will influence the jurisdiction that you're going to choose. Now then, when you do that exercise of mapping out everything, you realize that actually you need only four jurisdictions to cover global needs. So you need the US, which is Delaware, and that basically, you know, cover Americans in general. I think the UK is not a must-have, but it's a nice to have, and we started here, so we have it as well. And it's a very good jurisdiction. So you need the UK for like UK investors. You need something offshore, and that's basically particularly attractive to Asian investors. But like general Asia, so I put in that like, you know, people in Israel are very fond of like, you know, Cayman or offshore jurisdictions, people in China, in Japan, you know, in the Middle East in general. But you don't need to have all of the offshore jurisdiction if you wish, like they have the same features. So you need to have one of them. And it tends to be Cayman or Jersey, but there are other options as well. So we do Cayman today. And lastly, you need a, you know, European jurisdiction, which is within the EU in a kind of euro-denominated country. And again, you don't need to have all of them. You just need one of them. And that tends to be for VC and private equity, that tends to be Luxembourg. But, you know, some people do Ireland or, you know, other countries. Today, we have excellent coverage on offshore US and UK. We have coverage of the EU through our UK product, but we do not have the passporting rights for this platform. Which is something, you know, we're working on right now with various regulators so that, you know, our European customers can kind of market their deals across the union. And yeah, to go back to your second question, I mean, we're very bullish on the European ecosystem. I really think we just scratching the surface and there's a lot of potential. I mean, there's, you know, extremely high quality of founders. You know, there's a lot of diversity in Europe. There's a extremely high quality of engineer, which is very important as well. I would say where basically what's missing now, because we have these great founders, we have, there are a lot of, I guess, business-friendly incentives that various European governments have made. The capital is here, especially at early stage. But I would say where you still need to become American at some point is for exits. So basically, unless you're shooting at a small exit, like, you know, sub 150 million, I mean, I say small, it's still, you know, insane amount of money and life-changing for everyone. So there's nothing bad about that. But if you want multi-billion dollars exits, you know, you basically have two options, which is listing in the US or, you know, getting acquired by an American company. Obviously, I'm simplifying. I know there's more to that and there are a few options in Europe. But mainly at this stage, if you're overly ambitious, you need to, you know, to become American. So I would say that's where we're missing the most in the European ecosystem. But everything else is five star.
Yeah, you're definitely not the first person to lament the state of the exit kind of opportunity in Europe. And I think, you know, certainly if you look at some of the tech exits that have gone through IPOs here in the UK, at the very least, they have not been well received over the course of, you know, the next sort of 12 months or so after listing. Yeah. And if you look at kind of equivalent in the US, they tend to perform better, right?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And, you know, even us, like, I mean, you know, we received a few kind of high level, you know, M&A opportunities as we grew the business over the last 2 years. And I mean, you know, Eric and I love this business more than anything. And I do, you know, I know everyone says that, but I genuinely think we have the, you know, the best team ever for that. Like, you know, they're all like superstars. But I would say the only thing that would, you know, make us think about it is that the, you know, you're thinking for that number, there are going to be a lot of acquire in Europe. For that big of a number, you know, if we go, you know, 50x from where we are, then basically we, you know, we would either have to list in the US, which has, I mean, it's basically not easy to list in the US if you don't have any kind of big American market share. Or you would have to find an American acquirer. But same, you know, it's not that straightforward.
Yeah, 100%. I kind of feel like at some stage, I want to get a few people on the podcast. We've had Neil Shah from the London Stock Exchange here before. We've had Hussein Kanji, who's very vocal about this sort of these issues as well. I'd love to get a few of them on the podcast together and actually nut this out, because there's clearly, you know, one can argue the level of the gap, but there is a gap, right? Because obviously if companies are listing in the US or if they are going to the US to get acquired, that means that we have, you know, that we have a hole somewhere in the ecosystem here in the UK and Europe that is not allowing us to address that. So I think it is important. And I think obviously as Europe grows as an ecosystem, and I certainly think it's growing, and we've got some really great, you know, founders and really great ventures out here, then, you know, that hopefully will speed things along, albeit that unfortunately from a regulatory perspective, we know that regulation may remain slightly behind where those businesses are. So yeah, I think I would agree with you. At the moment, the options are limited, but let's hope that they change. So just switching to kind of the platform itself and the sort of stuff that goes through it, you know, you've had $1 billion go through the platform, which is an incredible achievement. What are the sort of the deals that you tend to see that get more traction on the platform? Is it down to the person that syndicates them, or is it the deal itself or the pedigree of the founding team? I'd love to get a flavor of kind of what sort of deals are coming through the platform.
So in terms of the deal flow, we see, a wide range, to be honest, like from food tech, AI, deep tech, consumer. It's very much sector agnostic. I would say every deal is vetted by your customers in some shape or form. So there's always been a number of calls, due diligence, and thought that goes into before fundraising for a startup. The person who syndicates plays a huge part for sure. I think you're right on this one. They have built a level of trust with investors. There's several scenarios, but one example that's easy to articulate is that we see a lot of ex-founders turn into investors, and they gain a lot of trust from other investors because they lived and breathed what it takes to build a successful company, and they've been in the trenches, which always give you a slightly different viewpoint. But ultimately, if it's a good deal, people, we want it. We've seen thematic syndicates do very well as well, Africa Tech or Space Tech, where basically, you would gather a small LP base of people that are very committed to investing in that space and that will invest in almost all of your deals. There's also very high demand. I haven't checked the numbers on our BI in the last 6 weeks. I guess it might have changed a bit, but before that, the demand was very high for follow-on rounds from our established VC clients. So anything that's a Series B onwards, especially if there's a clear path to liquidity, that would do very, very well on the platform.
Yeah, so I think to your point, thematic makes a lot of sense because you're then, so I guess if you think about traditional venture, often there is a very thematic approach, but to get the LP base involved, you've got to go out and secure your LP base before you start deploying capital. Whereas here you can do it on a deal by deal basis. Those investors in your syndicate can come in on a deal by deal basis, which means that, if they know that there is someone who's syndicating, the hot deals in deep tech or in space tech or whatever it might be, as you mentioned, it gives them that optionality without having to tie up their capital maybe in a fund or have to go and search for those deals themselves. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think it also makes a lot of sense for, again, to your point, people like you, like me, and others that I know who are very interested in the tech and venture ecosystem, but who are not necessarily able to deploy their own capital in an easy way. Okay, so moving on to kind of Vauban, the business, you've closed close to £5 million, I think, from a number of great VCs, some of whom we've had on the podcast. Andrew from 7% Ventures comes to mind. And fundraising is never easy, as you know. I guess you probably are best placed to talk about that, both as someone who has raised funds yourself and who is has founded a platform to help raise funds. So I'd love to understand the sort of challenges that you faced and maybe what you would do differently today if you're going out to raise again.
So it's definitely not easy. So I would say that's the first thing. It's, if you're struggling, it's normal. I guess it gets easier with time, when that's the good news, when your business gets revenue, have great growth, you're building a great team. It's just much easier to raise capital. So for us, the pre-seed was very, very, very hard, right? Because so it was Ulrich and I, two French in the 20s in London, raising money for a fund formation platform where everything is in English and common law, etc. First company as well. it wasn't easy. What we found, so basically, I think at that stage, you need to target angels rather than VCs. Like you really stand very little chance with VCs, especially in Europe. What worked actually pretty well for us was to cold message people on LinkedIn that are basically not self-proclaimed angel investors. So you would kind of search for people that have a very high income, like people that are partners in law firms, that have a job like MD in, like a PE firm or, a big investment bank, etc. So you know that these people could write like 10 to, 40K checks without, feeling it that much. And I guess on that, we luck in London, right? Because the new London was built on the city. So there's just a lot of these people. And then you would kind of cold message them. But I think one of the hack is to, it's to not say, here is my pitch deck, give me 10K, because they would just ignore it. But you more like, you know, I want to see if we could have a chat 10 minutes. You know, I would love to get your advice. And honestly, I think most people are actually very kind, right? Like all these people, they were actually super happy to help. And then at the end of the conversation, you know, you can say, by the way, I'm raising 100K. Do you know anyone that might be interested? And they could come and say, hey, actually, I can write a 10K check. So that has, I think that works decently. And I think because these people, they don't get, you know, sent as many pitch deck as people that have angel investors in their bio or that are from our ecosystem.
And also they're driven to some extent by the kind of, certainly here in the UK, by the tax efficiency, right? The SEIS and the EIS regulations. So to them, like the 10 or 20K is actually a saving ultimately. And that's maybe how they're looking at it more than anything else, right? Or they may have an interest, to your point, if they're from a legal or a finance background, they may well understand what you're trying to create. And therefore, there's also kind of an element of that passion for what you're doing.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, for us, we were really in legendary mode because we were not EIS eligible at that time, which, you know, then we hired a law firm and but that was more recent. They say you should be eligible and, you know, they sent a letter to HMRC and we got accepted, which is rightful. Like, there's no reason why we wouldn't be eligible. But when you're a two people team, you don't spend your time arguing with, you know, the revenue, basically. You're just like, okay, that's done. We're going to have to deal with it. And then after that first pre-seed round, which, you know, it helps you kickstart things, but it doesn't get you really far, right? You need to start raising again 6 months afterwards. So this time we went to VCs because we had some revenue, some product market fit, etc. And we found, basically, we cold messaged a lot of venture firm. And same, we got pretty decent result on that. I mean, you definitely being ignored more than people get back to you. But you just need one, right? You just need one term sheet. You don't need 50. So yeah, I would say that this would be my advice. Like, it's difficult, but it's not impossible.
I really love that. And I'll tell you why I love that, right? So I get a lot of those LinkedIn messages, in mails or whatever they are, which I hate, you know, which are just like, hey, we see you're investing here. Like, here's our pitch, here's our deck. And my first filter is I send them a link to an Airtable form. And I'm like, okay, just send your deck here. And you can tell very quickly the ones that listen, the ones that pay attention, the ones that don't, right? So those that pay attention obviously go to the form and they submit their deck. And like, even some really hot deals that have come my way, which I had no right to say to the founder, realistic, hey, go to this form and fill it out. Yeah. They still did that, right? And actually, I think the big problem with what a lot of people assume about investors and certainly angel investors is that it's a, like, the, there is no emotion, that it's a cold, hard kind of, here's a check, here's your money, here's my equity, all the rest, you know, and there's no emotion in there, which is wrong, right? Because investors are people too. They want to be courted. They want to feel like you are interested in that, you've actually reached out for a reason to them, and made to feel like you want them on your cap table, right? And I think your approach of, you know, Can I grab a coffee and get your thoughts on that, really helps, because it engages them. It gets their brain thinking around, okay, well, what is the value that I could add? And then from what is the value that I can add to, maybe I can write a small check. Actually, there's a smaller leap. Whereas going straight from, you know, cold email saying, or cold LinkedIn message saying, hey, I'm raising, are you interested? There's too much distance between that decision and that LinkedIn message to make it happen. And I think equally interesting on the VC side, I think the from my own experience, I've done it the other way around, right? So what I did was, on my pre-seed, I raised from angels. That's fine. But for the last 5-6 years, I've been building relationships with VCs without any intention, without even any knowledge about whether I would end up raising any money or not. And therefore, I know that I can have those conversations very easily now with these VCs, because I had no intention to raise money from them, right? So I can now pick up the phone or drop them the email and just say, look, I am now raising. I'd love your thoughts. But it's the same thing. I'd love your thoughts. It's not a direct ask for, hey, look, with, you know, I want you to invest. It's like, I'd love your thoughts. I want to understand whether this is right. And the other thing, I guess, is just to finish this sort of mini rant off is what is sensible for venture and what isn't sensible for venture, right? Which is, again, something that I've talked about a lot on the podcast. And what a lot of, I think, founders don't quite understand is to attract venture capital, to your point, here in the UK and Europe, very early stage is very hard. Pre-seed, it's remarkably hard. And at seed, you need the sort of traction that they're used to, which is not something, well, need the traction and also the ability to show that you can scale to the point where you can have an outsized outcome, right? Which is, I think, one of the big problems that a lot of founders in the UK and Europe maybe don't quite yet understand enough about. So this podcast is all about entrepreneurship and hopefully giving people the kind of courage, the tools, the confidence to back themselves and launch. And one of the biggest barriers to that is capital and access to capital, right? So you founded Vauban on the belief that more startups should get funded, more individuals should have access to early stage ventures as an asset class. So I'd love for you to talk us through why that's important. And from your perspective, and we've covered a lot of it, but how Vauban actually achieves these goals.
Completely. I agree with you with the point of access to capital. And I guess basically we see that there's always more capital available because, you know, it's easier to connect with all the technology, etc. You can raise from anywhere in the world. VCs can scout deals, you know, across the globe. But what I think people seem to be missing is that that's going to have the same impact as, you know, global trade on, you know, Western economies or that sort of things, which means that the overall numbers will keep increasing exponentially and there's going to be more capital, but it's going to be very imbalanced, which means that 70% of the VCs will want to invest in the top 15% of founders. Now, what does define the top 15% of founder? So if the company is super hot, it's a company. But if it's at early stages, you know, have you raised money before? Have you exited a business before? So I think that's really a shame, but that's a direct impact of over-connecting everything. And there's just nothing you and I can do about it. But I find that fact not basically stated enough, like, you know, because a lot of the people are like, wait, but there's 6 times more capital than before on the market. Why can't I, you know, raise? And the reality is that if you're not in that 10, top 15, 20%, most VCs don't even look at you. And that's just very, very natural. You're totally right. I mean, on, you know, what we're trying to do with Vauban. If you close your eyes for a minute and you think about a problem you'd like to see solved, you know, it can be very selfish, like, you know, you don't enjoy how painful it is to go from your yacht to your helicopter, or it can be very altruistic, like I don't know, solving world hunger, but whatever you just thought about, you know, there's a lot more capital than needed in the world to solve it, and I think that's something not everyone realizes as well. Like, there's enough capital in the world to solve all of our problems and to make everyone rich. The problem is that the rails that connect the people who have the capital to the one they're going to use it to solve humanity's biggest problems, these rails are completely broken. They're slow, they're ridiculously expensive, and they're painful to ride. You know, they're made of consultants, you know, lawyers, banks, and they're very, very archaic, and they're clearly not optimized for the world today. And, you know, quite simply, our mission is to fix these rails with technology. Or should I say it's to rebuild these rails with technology, actually, because we don't necessarily build on what already exists. And ultimately, that's going to make it easier for people with capital to deploy it, and therefore easier for innovators to get access to it. That's how we think about ourselves.
The fact that the ideas that are solving the planet aren't, or, you know, solving the biggest problems on the planet aren't necessarily getting connected with the capital to be able to solve them. You know, I always think about this in terms of emerging economies where, you know, to my mind, a lot of the bigger problems are being solved, right? Whether it's hunger, whether it's access to finance, whether it's inclusion in the economy, whether it's getting people into jobs and or education, right? Like in Africa or in Southeast Asia, or, you know, or even in South America for that matter, a lot of these problems are much more pronounced. And whilst we're kind of sitting here in the West funding, I'm going to go to my favorite, you know, the type of business I love to kind of hate on, you know, we're all funding 15-minute grocery delivery. It just doesn't seem like the capital's flowing to the right place, right? So exactly. I think that analogy really, really kind of strikes home. And I think what you said earlier in the podcast around the fact that it's also allowing for syndication into deals in Africa, where, you know, often you need that person who has that experience, that local understanding, that local knowledge, the understanding of, you know, what the market is, et cetera, before you will necessarily, you know, make a decision to invest in that business. I think is hugely powerful, right? So at the moment, if I were to think about investing in a Kenyan business, albeit that I come from Kenya and I know Kenya, I would probably rely on one of my cousins or my family members out there to understand more about, okay, what is happening in the market at the moment? Does this make sense, et cetera, right? So I think connect, you know, giving people the ability to connect, you know, to build those rails, or you building those rails that allows the people to connect, I think is massively, you know, massively important. So I think that's a really, really great kind of analogy.
Awesome. So you have you're from Kenya.
I'm from Kenya. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. We have a big, I mean, indirect through Investec, we have an investor from Kenya. It's an LP in one of the fund that invested in us, but we ended up meeting them, and yeah, that was quite fun.
Amazing. You will have to tell me offline who that is. It may well be someone I know. Look, Remy, it's been absolutely incredible having you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining me. For our listeners, where's the best place for them to find you online? Are you on LinkedIn? Are you on Twitter? Where can they find you on the web?
Well, you can like follow me on LinkedIn. It's just my name, Remy Astier, RemyAstie. I think my Twitter handle is the same. The only thing is that I'm not super religious about checking those DMs. So if you want to get a non-public conversation, a private conversation, I guess that's what it's called. You can just send me an email. I reply to emails much quicker. So it's Remy, R-E-M-Y, at Vauban, VAUVAN.io.
Amazing. Remy, thank you so much. Have a great day ahead.
No problem. Cheers, Arish.
Thanks for listening to Nothing Ventured, an Emerge One production. Follow us on social and at nothingventured.tech to make sure you never miss another episode. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can support us by giving us 5 stars on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We love to hear from our listeners to understand the topics and guests that they'd like to hear about and from most. Drop us a message via the links in the show notes, and thanks again for your support.